Funding for Here and Now Anytime comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
Hi, this is Here and Now Anytime, where we give you a little news, a little something you weren't expecting, and always a fresh, in-depth perspective on current events, arts and culture, and stories that matter. Subscribe or follow to get all our episodes out every weekday. And if you like what you hear, tell a friend about us to help spread the word. Now here's the show.
You know, we get hit with another hurricane the size of Maria. We'll definitely be knocked out for about a year. I think it's still that weak.
Puerto Rico's power grid is so rickety that those who can afford it are opting out entirely. It's Friday, December 22nd, and this is Here and Now Anytime from NPR and WBUR Boston. I'm Chris Bentley. Today on the show, an update to our reporting from Puerto Rico on solar microgrids. And the death of a 5-year-old boy in a migrant shelter shows the severity of the crisis in Chicago, where the city has struggled for more than a year now to accommodate tens of thousands of people sent from Texas.
Migrants inside the shelters are prohibited from taking photographs, from taking videos. But a couple of folks inside the shelter took a risk and shared some footage from inside. And what we saw was people lined up in cot after cot after cot, children visibly sick, and water leaking from the ceiling.
But first, the week in politics. The first votes in the 2024 presidential campaign are a little over 3 weeks away, believe it or not. But if you've been following the news this week, you might be looking more to the courts than the polls for clues as to how at least the Republican primary might go. The Colorado Supreme Court disqualified former President Trump from the ballot. And last night, the Detroit News reported that there's a recording from after the 2020 election of Trump pressuring two Republican election officials in Michigan to decertify Biden's victory. He, of course, is already under indictment in Georgia, because in a phone call, he asked officials there to find enough votes for him to win. Scott Tong convened our Friday Politics Roundtable to discuss it all. This time around, we've got Kay Henderson, news director at Radio Iowa, and Shelby Talcott, a reporter for Semaphore.
Shelby, let's talk about the reported recording of then-President Trump pressing Michigan officials to decertify Joe Biden's win in that state in 2020. It has not yet been made public, but how might this play out in the presidential race of 2024?
Yeah, well, we knew about this call a few years ago, but this is the first time that someone has actually obtained audio, and we now have specifics about what was apparently said. And the interesting thing that I've seen when I've talked to Trump's team over the past few days about this is that sense of defiance remains. And so they continue to argue among all of these legal issues and potential legal issues, as in this latest situation, that he was doing his job, essentially. And so I expect this development to just be a further example of how they're going to twist their legal problems and use it on the campaign trail to try to garner some of these Republican votes and rally the base. And so far, when I'm out on the ground in these early voting states, that has worked, at least with Republicans.
Yeah. Well, the Trump campaign says this call was meant to ensure what it calls election integrity. Kay, let's talk about the Iowa caucuses 24 days away. You spoke to a voter, gun rights activist Richard Rogers, and he told you he has Trump's legal troubles on his mind. Let's listen.
I'm really concerned that going forward with all these 91 indictments and the federal government having a 91% conviction rate, that the battle for the next year is going to be very distracting and not on the issues that you talk about.
The Trump camp has a giant lead in Iowa. Kay, any reason for his team to be worried about voters like Rogers?
Well, the Des Moines Register took a poll earlier this month, and they found that these woes that he has that are being bandied about really don't affect his supporters. I talked to one person at a Trump event who referred to it as just noise. So it really has not made a dent in his support in Iowa. And the people who are like the person you just heard, Richard Rogers, inclined to not support Trump, they're already looking at DeSantis. They're already looking at Haley. So it's a smaller group. The Des Moines Register poll showed that Trump has an incredible lead here.
Yeah. All right. And as you look at the polling over the past kind of weeks, any big change or are they pretty much remaining the same picture?
It is the same picture. And the only change that's actually happening here is that Trump is ramping up his appearances in Iowa. Earlier this fall, he said he would only be here, maybe six times between, September and the election. He's actually been in Iowa campaigning in person four times just in the month of December. He's coming back on January 5th. He's going to the same city where an Iowa congressman hosted Ron DeSantis and Nikki Haley earlier this month. So he and his team in Iowa are on offense.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Supreme Court's role in all of this. It will likely weigh in on cases that go directly to the 2024 race, including the Constitution's so-called disqualification clause. It says persons engaging in insurrection or rebellion shall not hold public office. Colorado Supreme Court says this does apply to Donald Trump. The U.S. Supreme Court is widely assumed to take up the appeal on this. Kay, what's at stake in this case?
Well, I'm not an attorney, but what I'm seeing on the ground here among people, again, let me cite this Des Moines Register poll, is it going to pull people away from Trump, depending on what happens with this Colorado case? Their poll indicates not. And it's just more evidence that Trump has an incredibly firm hold on a supermajority of Iowa Republican, likely caucus goers.
Yeah. Shelby, President Biden was asked if Donald Trump is an insurrectionist, and he said it was self-evident.
He saw it all. Now, whether the 14th Amendment applies, I'll let the court make that decision. But he certainly supported an insurrection. No question about it. None. Zero.
Shelby, until now, the Biden campaign has been relatively quiet on Trump's legal problems. But the president's poll numbers remain, to many, unimpressive. Is there any sign he's going after Donald Trump on these legal questions more directly?
Yeah, I think this is part of the Biden campaign's entire goal around this election. And I've talked to them over the past several months as they've begun to ramp up their campaign. And their whole theory of this case in part relies on bringing back that argument from 2020, which is the argument that Donald Trump is a threat to democracy. And so when you have these legal cases, bringing them up in that sense sort of drives that point home to the voters. So I certainly think we've already seen at least a little bit of an uptick with President Biden directly addressing Trump's legal issues while he's still being very careful to sort of stay out of answering questions about whether or not the court cases are correct or not. But it does add to their overarching argument that Trump is a threat to democracy, which is part of the big reason that was a successful argument back in 2020, and they're banking that it's going to be successful this time around again.
Yeah. Kay, let's talk about other Republicans in this presidential race. In Iowa yesterday, one voter asked Nikki Haley to label Trump a grave danger to the country. And here's what Haley said.
I don't think it's good for the country for Donald Trump to become president again. I've made that very clear. The problem is, what I have faced, anti-Trumpers think I don't hate him enough. Pro-Trumpers think I don't love him enough.
So, Kay, are Republican candidates like Nikki Haley under a lot of pressure in primary states to defend Trump before, he has so many true believers out there?
He does. And what's striking when you cover Nikki Haley and Ron DeSantis at events here in Iowa, One of the questions they commonly get is, why should I vote for you instead of Donald Trump in the caucuses? And Nikki Haley has been focusing on, you know, this chaos message, that chaos follows Trump, which in a way is not necessarily critical of anything that he's done. It's just sort of an overarching idea of, you've experienced what his presidency was like, and do you want to go through that again, rather than criticizing him specifically on things he says or does.
Yeah. On DeSantis, Shelby, he has been exclusively focused on Iowa. And this week he told the Christian Broadcasting Network that he wished Trump had never been indicted because, as he put it, it distracts voters.
It was just crowded out, I think, so much other stuff, and it sucked out a lot of oxygen.
Shelby, what does DeSantis have to do in the Iowa caucuses to stay alive in this race?
That is a very good question, and I think his team is asking that same thing. And I think one of the biggest problems that we're going to see with Ron DeSantis in Iowa is that there's a chance that he has overpromised his results in the state. So remember, a few weeks ago, he said, yeah, I'm going to win Iowa, whereas Nikki Haley's team has been pretty clear on saying, well, we're going to do the best we can, which is sort of a more general message and doesn't leave room for people to point at the results of Iowa and say, well, she underperformed. I think something big is going to have to change with Ron DeSantis's campaign. And I think it's really telling what he said just there, because that's the belief of all of the presidential campaigns, maybe except for Chris Christie. These indictments have really strengthened Donald Trump, at least in the primary. And none of the presidential candidates who are running against Donald Trump have figured out that very fine line of how to criticize him and show voters that they're different than Donald Trump and that they should be garnering their vote, while also not turning voters off to them by criticizing him too much.
Yeah. Speaking of Nikki Haley, she is surging in New Hampshire. And now a Trump super PAC is running this ad accusing Haley of waffling on a gas tax in South Carolina. Let's take a listen.
Just 24 months later, high tax Haley flipped.
Let's increase the gas tax by 10 cents.
That's right. High tax Haley broke her promise.
Kay, I know you're in Iowa, but you certainly have an eye to New Hampshire. Does the Trump campaign more broadly see Haley as a threat going forward?
Well, I mean, the polling shows that she is surging there. She's not surging here, according to the latest polling, to the extent that she is in New Hampshire. And as people who've watched Iowa's results and New Hampshire's results over the years know, oftentimes the winner in Iowa is not successful in New Hampshire. It's just a contrarian kind of thing. And so I think they're trying to guard against that with that kind of advertising. And I will say that was a message that the Trump campaign levied, a similar message against DeSantis really early in the campaign here, about taxes.
Mm. Okay. We've been talking to Kay Henderson of Radio Iowa and Shelby Talcott of Semaphore. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up next, authorities are looking into conditions at Chicago migrant shelters after the death of a 5-year-old boy. Scott has more after the break.
In Chicago, a migrant crisis is growing. The recent death of a 5-year-old boy in a city shelter shows how severe things appear to be. Texas has sent some 25,000 newly arrived migrants by bus to Chicago. And on Tuesday, Texas Governor Greg Abbott said his state began flying them in as well. It's part of his battle with the Biden administration over border and immigration rules, though critics challenge the legality of these moves. Joining us now is Michael Loria. He's covering this for the Chicago Sun-Times. Hi, Michael.
Hey, Scott. Thanks for having me on.
There were already many migrants in these shelters in Chicago. Now Texas is sending more straight from the border. What do we know about conditions for migrants and how crowded these shelters are?
So there's about 27 shelters around the city, plus O'Hare Airport, which has become a sort of informal migrant shelter. What we know is that, you know, conditions kind of vary a lot between shelters. I mean, some of them are quite small, like about 100 people, but some of them are quite large. What we're hearing from some of the larger shelters is that the conditions are not great. And I think the most obvious evidence of that was a 5-year-old boy who passed away at the largest shelter in the city on Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Jean Carlos Martinez Rivero, reportedly his family, migrant family, recently went to Chicago a couple weeks before he died. What do we know about the specifics of his case?
Yeah, so the Martinez Rivero family moved into the shelter in, I guess it was the end of November, on November 30th. And this was a new shelter in the city. It has about 2,500 folks in there. That's about 1,000 more than the next largest shelter. Just getting back a little bit more into the shelter conditions. I mean,
yes.
From what we know, migrants inside the shelters are prohibited from taking photographs, from taking videos. But a couple of folks inside the shelter took a risk and shared some footage from inside. And what we saw was, you know, people lined up in cot after cot after cot, children visibly sick on these cots, and water leaking from the ceiling. And you can't get this from the footage, obviously, but from what I've been told by migrants in the shelter and from what I've been told by healthcare workers in there, it's quite cold. Access to drinking water is limited. And also, you know, the smell of vomit is lingering in the air.
Oh, Michael. Yeah. Michael, let me ask about the city. How is Chicago responding to this influx of migrants from Texas? Is there any legal or policy challenge to the state of Texas?
That I haven't really been able to get a firm answer on from the city. I know I was at a press conference yesterday where one of our local congressmen was calling on the Department of Justice to investigate Texas Governor Greg Abbott for human trafficking. But I mean, in terms of how the city is responding, I think, you know, the city says that they're responding as best they can by opening up shelters, providing food and help with other things like apartments. But I think what we're hearing from folks who are helping the city take care of these people is that they're not moving fast enough.
I understand Chicago had sought to build a winterized shelter for 2,000 people or so, but the state of Illinois blocked it. What's happening there?
Right. So that was a plan earlier in the year to build a massive sort of tent shelter to house thousands of migrants. This was something that was sort of first pitched when thousands of migrants were sleeping outside at police stations. The city kind of built it as a quick fix to the problem. Ultimately, the land that the city planned to use, the Illinois Department of the Environment decided was not fit for humans to stay on.
Yeah.
So for the time being, that plan is on ice.
I understand. All right. Thank you. Michael Loria from the Chicago Sun-Times. Michael, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, an update to our reporting on solar power in Puerto Rico. There's a bunch of new federal money to get people there off the shaky power grid and onto rooftop solar systems. More when we return.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Humana. Your employees are more than your coworkers. They're the heartbeat of your business. That's why Humana offers modern group benefits designed to protect employees and their families with dental, vision, life, and disability coverage. Humana knows every employee and every business is unique. That's why they listen to your needs and build plans with you and your team in mind. That's the power of human care. This message comes from NPR sponsor Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy: family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's TELADOC health/whatsyourwhy.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Mint Mobile. From the gas pump to the grocery store, inflation is everywhere. So Mint Mobile is offering premium wireless starting at just $15 a month. To get your new phone plan for just $15, go to mintmobile.com/switch. This message comes from the Kresge Foundation. Established 100 years ago, the Kresge Foundation works to expand equity and opportunity in cities across America. A century of impact, a future of opportunity. More at kresge.org.
Earlier this year, I went to Puerto Rico to talk to people about solar power and microgrids. We ran the story back on June 28th, and you can find it in that day's podcast episode, as well as at hereandnow.org. It was about how communities on the island are going solar and off the grid if they can, especially since Hurricanes Irma and Maria devastated the island in 2017. 6 years later, the power grid is still shaky. One of the people I met was Juan Rios, president of the La Margarita Neighborhood Association in the town of Salinas. She's been trying to get money for a solar microgrid so her neighbors, who are mostly senior citizens, can have a more reliable source of power. Back in June, I asked her what she needed to make it happen. And here's what she told me.
The money. I mean, everybody is saying that they have the money for energy, renewable energy. But the reality is, they haven't given me anything. It's not easy what we're doing, but we need to do justice to these elderly people.
Well, Rios just got some money from the federal government as part of $440 million in new grants to install solar systems across Puerto Rico. The group working with her to set that up is called Solar United Neighbors, and its Puerto Rico program director, David Ortiz, is here to talk more about it. Hey, David.
Hey, Chris. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah. My pleasure. So this money is slated specifically for vulnerable households across Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
I know your organization has helped a lot of people install solar panels. I just want you to tell us about one of the communities that you work in. Can you give us an example of someone or some neighborhood that recently got solar through your group and what it means to them?
Yeah. So a great example of that is El Conquistador in Trujillo Alto. Trujillo Alto, like many other communities in Puerto Rico, are having blackouts on a regular basis. We're talking about blackouts 3 to 4 times a week. In many cases, these are folks who need specific equipment, right, for health reasons. And because of that, it becomes even more serious. It's a life and death situation. When you could count on solar and know that, you know, you have your battery backup, and that if the grid goes down, you're going to be able to count on the electricity that's stored in your battery. You know, there's nothing that brings more relief than hearing our members tell us, I got through Fiona, my battery kicked in, and I was able to get through the few days and weather the storm well. That fills us.
I think a lot of people are probably familiar with the idea of putting solar panels on your house, like on an individual basis or maybe a business doing it. But I know you're also involved with solar co-ops where groups will own and operate microgrids, basically. How does that work? And does that mean they're going to be completely off the grid or using the main island grid as like a backup?
Yeah, so it depends on the model, right? If we go with a microgrid, we're hoping to still stay connected to the grid. If we if they go rooftop solar and alone, we're hoping that they still stay as connected to the grid, because it's important to make sure that they have that electricity at night and they're not just depending on the batteries. But the batteries are normally something you just depend on when you lose electricity, which here happens often. So the less you use the battery life, the longer your battery will last.
There are a lot of people who want to do this, but it's not cheap. So there are all these federal grants out there, but how big of a difference is it making? Is it enough, the kind of grant programs that are out there, or is there another step needed for people to get access to financing for these sorts of things if they want them in their communities?
Yeah, I think there's a lot more that still needs to be done. We still need to continue to get additional funding so that we can move those folks from these vulnerable communities towards getting solar. The truth of the matter is that there's still a lot of people that are being left out. And so we got to be able to find ways through credits and other ways to help folks go solar in a much easier way.
Who are the types of people that are being left out or left behind right now, you think, or the types of communities that are not getting what they need?
So basically these low-income communities, right? And the senior citizens that are out there, right, that live alone or live alone with their partner and, you know, are in their 80s and, going solar for them doesn't make sense, right? Or it's not financially viable for them, right? And in the mountains, we see that they tend to consume less electricity. So sometimes staying on the grid is better than actually going solar and paying twice the amount, right, of what you pay for an energy bill. And in the grid, in the mountains, the reason why that happens is because the mountains are cooler. So they don't use an AC as much like we do in the inner city, for example. And so, you know, in cases like those, any sort of additional financial benefit that could help them go solar would be extremely helpful.
Now, I know Puerto Rico has a law mandating 100% renewable energy, and there's a debate about whether that can be achieved primarily through these types of small-scale solar projects, or if you need to have big utility-scale wind and solar farms too, which can have environmental footprints of their own, you know, displacing people and agricultural land in some cases. What are the challenges that you foresee as Puerto Rico continues down this energy transition?
Yeah, I think we believe that that rooftop solar is the way to go. There was a study done from the University of Mayagüez that said that if we had rooftop solar on every home in Puerto Rico, we'd have enough energy to power the whole island. And I think that that's the way to do it. What some of the challenges are is basically what I mentioned earlier, is making sure that no one's left behind in that process. Things like net metering, which is the tool that gives you credit for the electricity that you produce, continues to exist in Puerto Rico. To help folks to sort of recuperate the investment on their system. I wish I could say IRA was available to Puerto Rico, but it's not.
Inflation Reduction Act?
The Inflation Reduction Act, IRA, yeah. That tax credit isn't available to folks in Puerto Rico. It's available
for solar installations.
For solar installations, right. Yeah. Which would, you know, give you a 30% rebate on the installation of a system for your home. So these kind of things we don't have access to. And if we are able to protect net metering and find other incentives that could help folks go solar, that would be the ideal way to do it.
That's so interesting that Puerto Rico doesn't have access to the same resources that the mainland does. But that's been the case for a long time with a lot of things, and not just solar, right? Do you feel like the grid in Puerto Rico is more prepared for a hurricane today than it was in 2017 before Hurricanes Irma and Maria?
I think if we got hit with a hurricane, with a Category 1 hurricane, we'd be knocked down for months. I think it's still that weak. So, you know, we get hit with another hurricane the size of Maria, we'll definitely be knocked out for about a year. But the good thing is that we have programs like the DOE, like the CDBG or the Community Block Grant, and other programs that are doing a good job of trying to move folks to go solar as soon as possible.
All right. Well, hopefully we don't have to find out what would happen if a big hurricane hits again anytime soon. David Ortiz, Program Director for Solar United Neighbors in Puerto Rico. Thanks.
Chris, thank you. Thanks for having me on the show.
Head to hearingnow.org and look for our series Reverse Course to hear my reporting from Puerto Rico. And, of course, make sure you're subscribed to Here and Now anytime so you don't miss anything else. That's our show for today. It comes from the team behind Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston. Today's stories were produced by Lynn Menigon, Thomas Danielian, and me, Chris Bentley. Today's editors were Mark Navin, Micaela Rodriguez, and Kat Welch. Technical direction from Mike Moschetto and Caleb Green. Theme music by me, Mike, and Max Liebman. Our digital producers are Allison Hagen and Grace Griffin. And the executive producer of Here and Now is Carleen Watson. Thanks for listening. If you're celebrating this weekend, I hope you and your loved ones have yourself a merry little Christmas. We've got new episodes every day next week, as always, including on Christmas. So queue up the podcast feed when you're making dinner or wrapping presents. And we'll be back with you on Monday.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Homes.com. What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? These are all things parents ask when they home shop. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools. Homes.com, we've done your homework. Support for NPR and the following message come from IXL Online. Is your child asking questions on their homework you don't feel equipped to answer? IXL Learning uses advanced algorithms to give the right help to each kid, no matter the age or personality. One subscription gets you everything. One site for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And NPR listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/NPR.